Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish. The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
It is 7:44. Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, I think. I don't even know what to wish you. How are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. I think we're even allowed to still say Shana Tova.
Oh, well, then that's even better.
I
like a good Shana Tova.
I think you can wish everybody a good year at any moment in time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. It can't do any harm, certainly.
Exactly. I hope that everybody had a good long weekend and a good Chag. Of course, in Israel, we're all already over our Chag since yesterday. On the second night, what would be the second night of Simchat Torah in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel, and it's of course the end of Simchat Torah in Israel, it is very traditional to have what they call Hakafot Shniot, to repeat the Hakafot that were done the previous evening, of course, along with those communities outside of Israel. But in Israel, it's done in town squares and it's done outdoors, inviting everybody around the town or city to join in. There is usually a band playing. I saw the Hakafot Shniot from the Kotel, which took place on Monday evening, and it was certainly a very, very celebratory atmosphere. So that is traditional in Israel, to not only have one time of the Hakafot for the Simchat Torah, but indeed to repeat it the following evening as well, to bring everybody together. I think it's a really, really nice custom. Those people who've had the opportunity to see it will know what I'm talking about, and I hope people will agree that it's a nice thing to bring people together. The interesting piece of news from this morning, which caught my eye, is apparently that there's a faction within the Taliban, which are, of course, the rulers of Afghanistan, and is a very extreme Islamist organization. Apparently, there is a faction within the Taliban who is open to the idea of establishing relationship with Israel. Hmm. Now, this takes the Abraham Accords to a whole new level. And I don't, people shouldn't believe for a moment that this is an official Afghanistan government pronunciation or a view that is being held by officially within the government. But it seems as if though there is a certain faction within the Taliban who think that it would be good to open relations with Israel. I'm not sure that Israel is open to this idea quite yet, but who knows?
That is, it's just so bizarre. I thought one of the tenets of the whole of Taliban was hatred for Israel. But either way, it's certainly something that just makes us scratch our head in wonderment. With 2 weeks to go, Israel's election, there seems to be no prospects of a government being formed.
Yeah, well, I mean, the way that things are looking at the moment, if one has a look at the opinion polls, and of course now that we are finally over the holiday period, over the Chagim, and we can concentrate on other things, attention, of course, turns to the election. The election due to take place on the 1st of November. It's only less than 2 weeks from now, and so obviously we're into the real money time. It's been noticeable how the leader of the opposition and former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been going out and doing a lot of public relations work. He's been appearing on American TV channels. He's been doing a lot of diplomacy in order to try and present himself as a Prime Minister in waiting. The opinion polls are telling us the following, that the only real prospect of a government being formed is really under the Likud and under Netanyahu's premiership, and most of the polls are revolving around whether the Likud will or will not be able to form a government. Will they be able to get the required 61 seats in their coalition or not? And they've been hovering around the possibility of perhaps getting 61 seats, but mostly in the area of 58, 59, 60 seats, not quite enough to get a government. The issue that I have is that there is no real alternative, because usually when it comes to elections, it's either A or B. But the problem with us is that in the case of A, it looks like it's Netanyahu. He may well be a winner and the next prime minister. But if he doesn't win, it doesn't seem to be there doesn't seem to be any prospect of anybody else becoming prime minister, because if we look at the anti-Netanyahu bloc, we have there the possibility of Yair Lapid being the prime minister, or indeed Benny Gantz, who I think also has aspirations to be the prime minister. But even if we put the entire anti-Netanyahu bloc together, we still can't seem to scrape a majority. And one of the reasons is because in the other 60 seats, which are the non-Netanyahu 60 seats, we also have the Arab parties. And some of those Arab parties seem not to be able to be included in a government almost under any circumstances. The current coalition, the current ruling coalition, does include some Arab parties. Some, not all of the Arab parties, some of the Arab parties. So in order for either Yair Lapid or Benny Gantz to become prime minister, it seems as if that they would need to include all of the Arab parties into their coalition, and even then, they might not be able to achieve a majority. So the way that things are being positioned right now is that it's either Netanyahu or back to elections.
Wow.
That's the way that things are currently looking. And even the Netanyahu bloc, which seems to be a very determined bloc, we know exactly who will or will not support Netanyahu. That bloc is well determined, and even that bloc at the moment doesn't seem to be able to achieve the 61 required seats in order to form a coalition. So the big question is there any party within the anti-Netanyahu bloc, within the current governing coalition, the Yair Lapid, Naftali Bennett coalition, who may be willing to cross over and support Netanyahu to take him over the line? It will absolutely mean that Netanyahu will be the prime minister. Nobody else in that bloc has the prospect of being prime minister, but at least it will mean we have a government. So that's the way that current things are currently looking. It's somewhat pessimistic for those people, particularly for those people who don't want to see prime minister, the former prime minister Netanyahu, returning to the premier seat. But at the moment, he seems to be the only real possible future prime minister as things stand. As much as I was the one who predicted that he would never return to be prime minister, I could be proven wrong on this occasion.
And what's so interesting is there was this move to say, well, you know, we'll do a deal with you, you won't go back to politics, but we'll drop all criminal charges and things like that. And he said no, and he seems to have made the right decision for himself. I'm not saying it's the right decision for the country, but certainly for himself, it does seem to be it seems to have been the right move.
Absolutely, and what's more, I mean, we can't forget, of course, that the court case is still ongoing in the background and will continue to be ongoing for some time ahead, and it seems to have influenced the general Netanyahu supporting public almost nothing.
Which is just absolutely fascinating. I'd love your thoughts on that on 34519 or 061-895-1019. Would you be happy to see Netanyahu back in the position as Prime Minister again? Iran's involvement in Ukraine, in the Ukrainian war, may change things for Israel. What is Israel's current position?
Well, currently, Israel is still on the fence. In other words, no official change to policy with regard to support or lack of support for Russia. There certainly have been statements made, quite strong statements, criticizing Russia's actions in Ukraine, particularly when bombs were dropped on Kiev and other cities in Ukraine. There were statements made against Russia. But formally right now, Israel's position is still somewhere in between. In other words, no real sanctions have been applied on Russia. And it's quite fascinating to note in the press that the wife of the Speaker of the Russian Parliament is apparently currently on holiday in Israel. Now, this is an individual, the Speaker of the Russian Parliament and his wife are both individuals who are blacklisted in other countries. And yet she is, if we believe the press, holidaying somewhere in Tel Aviv right now. So that shows some level of support for very, very high levels of the Putin government and the individuals involved in the Putin government. On the other hand, we know that Israel and individuals within the Israeli government are highly critical of Russia's actions, but very, very nervous about speaking out too loudly and, of course, nervous about applying sanctions on Russia. We note that former Russian President Dmitry Medvedev made a threat, issued a threat to Israel, saying that that if Israel chooses to take a more extreme approach to Russia and more critical of Russia, that there will be significant consequences for Israel. So that threat was mouthed very, very loud and clear in the last few days against Israel. But Israel has not gone as far as providing Ukraine with any weaponry. Now, we do understand via backdoor media that when Iran provided those drones to Russia, we understand that Iran has provided somewhere between 200 and 300 drones to Russia for use in Ukraine, and those drones have been dubbed kamikaze drones because apparently they are armed and they are being used to crash into places on the ground and explode in order to conduct a warfare from the air using these drones. And so we understand that Israel did provide Ukraine with some intelligence and some technical information about those drones in order to somehow assist Ukraine in defending themselves against the Russian use of these Iranian drones. Here's the issue, though. Apparently, there are Iranian members of the Iranian National Guard, the Revolutionary Guard, who are being stationed in Russia and indeed within the area of Ukraine in order to advise Russia about the use of these drones. And what we're seeing is Iran getting more and more involved actively in the war in Ukraine on behalf of Russia. And that potentially, that Iranian involvement with Russia in the war in Ukraine could potentially change everything for Israel, because as it becomes clearer that Iran is more and more involved in Russia, with Russia in Ukraine, I think that Israel will be forced in some way to take a much stronger stand against Russia. Where that will leave things with regard to Russia when talking about Russia's involvement in Syria remains to be seen. But we are on the verge, I think, of something of a change to Israel's policy in the Ukrainian war.
I would imagine it's even more than Israel, because when you've got a situation that where Russia is demanding that NATO troops, Americans, British, aren't in the area, and that they don't get involved, but you have Iranians in the area doing exactly that, I think it might change it for just about everybody, which is going to definitely signal an escalation.
I imagine so. I think that Ukraine have done remarkably well. Obviously, they do have quite significant support from Western powers, although not all of that support is necessary, publicized and well known. And we know that Israel has been trying to support Ukraine, let's say, beneath the radar, not to make it too obvious to Russia, providing humanitarian aid, providing medical assistance for Ukrainian soldiers who've been brought to Israel to try and help them to rehabilitate from injuries that they've sustained in the war, providing intelligence about the Iranian drones that Russia is using. All of that Israel has managed to do below the radar. But I think that things are about to get a little bit more visible now.
No doubt about that. We don't have a lot of time, but I do want to talk about Australia having reversed its recognition of West Jerusalem as Israel's capital. What led to the decision, and what's Israel's reaction to this?
So I think what's led to the decision is simply a change of government in Australia, because what's noticeable is that a decision that was taken by Australia to recognize West Jerusalem, and it was quite carefully worded back in 2018 when Australia decided that West Jerusalem would be recognized as the capital of Israel. At that time, the government in Australia was a conservative government. Since then, Australia have had elections, they've had a change of government, and now we have a much more left-leaning Labour centered government in Australia, and they issued some sort of a notification already some time ago, even before they came into power, that they would not recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and that the status of Jerusalem needs to be decided by negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians, and what's more, of course, a very, very strongly worded support for a Palestinian state. Now, the Israeli reaction has been quite intense and quite significant, because not so much because of the derecognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital, but more about the possibility that the Australian government may well come out in support, officially more in support of setting up a Palestinian state, and may even recognize a Palestinian state, even though it doesn't officially exist at the moment.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's what Israel is somewhat nervous about, what may happen next. We still don't know what that is. But of course, it's quite ironic that people don't recognize Jerusalem as its capital and yet send their leaders to meet with our government in Jerusalem and, you know, are happy to roam around Jerusalem under Israeli. So it's there is certainly a little dilemma that we see there.